Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks for coming along. I'm probably going to intentionally get through a little bit quicker so that we can have a slightly longer lunch, because I'm sure everyone will appreciate that. So today, I'm doing a new talk. It's a new year, a new talk. With great power comes great responsibility. And like many of my talks, it essentially revolves around the fact that I'm having a bit of a moan. And I've got a little bit of a reputation for having a moan. And generally, when I do talks, they tend to revolve around me talking about trying to push things forward, getting people to use the latest techniques, not worrying too much about the older browsers that can't keep up, giving a better experience to people who have newer browsers and rewarding those users with cool new features. And that tends to be the general gist of stuff that I talk about. And today is actually going to be the flip side of that. It's going to be looking at what happens when people misuse these tools. People have all these cool things. We're so excited about HTML5 and CSS3 and fantastic new JavaScript libraries and stuff like that coming out. But I'm starting to see a lot of misuse of them on the web. And so it's the flip side. It's actually me saying, forget what I said earlier, stop using all that new stuff. So the trouble is that people aren't really considering why they're adding a lot of these new effects. You know, things like text shadow is one I'm going to come back to a lot. And transforms and animations and all these things which are really cool and people doing some fantastic stuff with them. But again, there is a lot of misuse out there on the web. So a few years ago, it seems like ages ago now, I did this talk called Destroy the Web 2.0 Look. This photo was taken when I was doing it in New York in 2007. And this was a real moan. This was like me at my absolute moaniest. And what I was talking about was, at the time, there was this real, this trend, this Web 2.0 trend, and it had gone from being this developer-specific thing to something like, it was actually becoming an aesthetic. So people were applying these effects all over the place, and they were calling it the Web 2.0 look, and it was glossy, and it was kind of ridiculous. And this is one of the sites, if it works, nope, there we go, that I was talking about. It was a good site because it was an example of, at the time, all these cliches being thrown into one place. The incredible thing about this site was I went to have a look when I was preparing these slides last week, just to see what they'd changed in the 3 years, and actually absolutely nothing. It's still a big cliche, so sorry if anyone who designed the site is actually here. So Web 2.0 cliches, things I was moaning about, stuff like these kind of big stickers, these flashy stickers, which I like to kind of call the for sale stickers, kind of thing that you'd used to see in Woolworths when it was reduced to really cheap and nasty, a lot of that stuff going around, not much fun, a lot of gradients, of course, lots of gloss, people trying to ape the Apple site and kind of failing miserably. This weird trend for diagonal lines, don't know what that was about. Thankfully, we seem to have moved on from that, which is quite nice. Rounded corners, of course, are here to stay. I'm willing to accept that now. And there's this things like kind of this soft outer glow and stuff. And at the time, this was being done with images. And now we're doing it with CSS3 and stuff like that, which is great. But anyway, these were the things I was having a moan about. We've moved on now. We're not so, I don't think there are as many cliches going around right now. There's some really fantastic stuff being done in web design. And new adventures as a whole, as you know already from the talks that have come before, we're talking about describing the web with a better vocabulary, a richer vocabulary, and getting the web elevated to the kind of level that print design has enjoyed for a number of years. And there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's a lot of reason to be very excited about working in web design right now. Have you guys seen this? The Nike Better World site. I think if the Wi-Fi is forgiving enough, I'm going to quickly jump to it and see if we can have a quick peek. If you haven't seen it before, it's a really fantastic example of people doing some quite cool stuff with, oh, hello. That's not gonna work, is it? Okay, we'll tell you what, I'll go back to the slides and you can pretend that it moves. I've really screwed things up now. Okay. My apologies for this. I'm gonna restart Keynote and see if that gets us anywhere. I can't do that either. Ah, technology. And my nice new Mac with its nice new shiny SSD drive. still doesn't actually work when you want it to. Okay, we're back. Even though I actually just pressed quit keynote. That shouldn't have worked. So the Nike Better World site, it's really cool. It's quite magazine-like, not in that kind of typical art-directed thing that we're seeing a lot of recently, but it moves, it's kind of responsive to a degree. It's got some really cool parallax effect stuff going on, and not just a pale imitation of the Silverback site, which is nice. People are doing more interesting things than that now these days, which is cool. The WebKit Clock site, which is really fantastic as well. Just, again, one of these sites that's showing off all the cool stuff that can be done with new technology, a lot of SVG stuff in there, absolutely no image files at all. You may have seen this 3D text example recently, which is great. It's creating the illusion of 3D text, but without anything like absolutely no images. There's no things like unnecessary divs and spans and whatnot. Just a few text shadows put on essentially one line of CSS to create this quite cool effect. Ben the Bodyguard, guys seen this? It's really cool because the site's fantastic and we basically, none of us really have any idea what the service is like, but I bet we all signed up, right? Really cool, you scroll down, the guy walks along, he encounters these little characters and all stuff happens. And it's actually even it's even responsive, so if you resize the browser window, there's a point where he walks past and a number of train carriages roll past. If you have a small browser window, only one carriage rolls past and stuff like that. A lot of really nice little details in there. But the trouble with having so much good stuff is there's so much shit stuff out there as well. So as with the tradition of me moaning and pulling apart sites, here are some examples I'm not so fond of. Now, these examples aren't necessarily about bad design as a whole, but more people not necessarily thinking about why they're applying certain effects. Now, actually, in this example, this isn't really about CSS3 or HTML5 or JavaScript libraries or anything like that. It's just about simple design decisions. So, for instance, what we have here, you've got these two cylindrical kind of objects, these three-dimensional objects at the bottom, which, with the gradients and the angles and everything, give the illusion of it being these two cylinders. But you have text that sits over the top, which is completely flat. Now, I'm not suggesting that we find a way of transforming it to go all the way around because it would kind of look a bit silly, but the idea here is that there are two contrasting elements. There's a three-dimensional one happening here and a two-dimensional one happening there, and they're actually contrasting and they're kind of ruining that whole experience. This one, if you can see, it might be a little bit hard to see the details on these screens, but essentially you've got these green boxes on the left, and they're kind of wrapping round from this other kind of invisible column behind. But then you've got this white area in the middle, which is sitting above the background. So, but the green bits are kind of coming out of that. And it doesn't make sense. It's like an M.C. Escher drawing, but shit. This is, I don't really need to say anything about this, but why are there gradients there? I don't know. It's, don't know why they do that. Texture. This is a site that has absolutely texture everywhere. Right, it's got some rough paper. Check. It's got a little bit of tape holding it at the side. Check. It's got some hand-scrawled icons. Check. And it's got some dashed lines, so you look like you can get some scissors and cut it out. Brilliant. I've been very, very guilty of this myself. There's a lot of stuff in my portfolio which has this over-reliance on texture. And it's something I'm trying to move away from a little bit these days. Last example is just because you can have bones around your text inputs doesn't mean you have to. So the thing that these things all have in common is that they're trying to make things look real. And you only have to look around any of the inspiration galleries and whatnot at the moment to see all these things. They're full of textures and post-it notes and that little stock vector of the coffee stain that's usually in the top right. And this is all fine, and like I said, I'm very guilty myself of these things. But the thing is that it's only one part of design. It's one layer. If you take away that layer, often beneath that, the designs themselves aren't necessarily that strong. And the thing is that it's all focused on making things look real, which is great. But the actual content itself, often there's very little to it. The grid's kind of some ad hoc thing that you made up and hoped would work, and it didn't really. And what I'm trying to do myself and trying to encourage other people to do is to get away from this, to say, take off this layer and then think about what we're really doing. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves is, am I trying to make these elements on a page look like something real, to look like a real world object? And then, depending on your answer to that question, you're then saying, why? Why am I doing that? And think long and hard about it. Now, it might be that you are saying, yes, I do want this div to float off the page as if it were a piece of paper. That might be fine. But the trouble is that we often do these things without thinking about it. We add a drop shadow in there. We add a little page curl. We add all these kind of things which sort of semi-simulate the real world, but why do they? Often they don't need to. So, if we're talking about real stuff going on, we really need to look at Don Norman. And he's got this idea of perceived affordance. Now, he wrote this book called The Psychology of Everyday Things, also published as The Design of Everyday Things, in which he talks about the idea of us as designers making things look like they can be essentially interacted with, to kind of suggest that they are real, using metaphors and stuff from the real world. He recently, he's got some great essays online as well, and he wrote one recently which kind of sums up some of the ideas in his book. And he also says that where he said affordance, he really should have said perceived affordance, because people have kind of got hold of the wrong end of the stick. And a really good example is, you've probably all encountered, you know, tried to get cash out of a cash machine, and there are ones where they have options on screen and they're all beveled and embossed and they look like buttons. You're stabbing madly at it, only to find that the buttons aren't the touch screen, they're actually down the side. So this is an example of negative affordance. So Don Norman says in this essay which he's got on his site is, what the designer cares about is whether the user perceives that some action is possible, or in the case of perceived non-affordance, not possible. In product design, there can be both real and perceived affordances, and the two need not be the same. In graphical screen-based interfaces, all that the designer has available is control over perceived affordances. So in other words, if you've got a real object, that's great. You can see how you might be able to interact with it. You can touch it. You can see what works. With design on the screen, all we have is kind of suggesting that something can be interacted with and played with. Now, I have a bit of a pet peeve. And it's the, if you know, if you're going to make something look like it's a three-dimensional real object, then you really need to get it right. So let's zoom in. Is that working? Yeah, good. Okay, so this type has got, hopefully you can just about see it, it's got a drop shadow beneath it so that it appears to stand off from the page. But it's also, if you look in the white areas, you'll see it the best in the counters in the uppercase B. You'll see that it's also got this kind of secondary shadow that's beneath the spaces in between. And that gives it the illusion that it's kind of been sort of cut out from the, if you've got sort of taken a picture of the whole website and then cut out those little words. And it doesn't really make any sense, because you're kind of saying on one hand that the type is above on one level, it is at the forefront. On the other hand, you're saying that it's kind of behind, because these other elements, these mysterious other elements, are creating this shadow over it. Again, M.C. Escher drawing that doesn't look good at all. So let's just, while we're still with this example of type and looking at this, let's take some type. I just need to go back one. Okay, so nice basic type. You'll see that I've used Helvetica Neue for a truly homogenized design. Nothing to it at the moment. Now, we're going to take the example of the text shadow. So we add, it's going to be very hard to see here, I'm afraid, a very subtle shadow underneath the type on the bottom. Now, this creates the illusion, of course, that the type is floating above the page, right? Pretty basic stuff, and we're all going to recognize that. Now, if we reverse that and we move the shadow to the top, you can just about see, it creates this kind of embossed effect. It's kind of like this letterpressed effect, which is great. You know, we all love letterpress, so let's throw it online. But, and you're seeing it everywhere at the moment, and that's fine. But okay, let's take another example. Let's reverse out the text. So we've got black text now, and we're going to add the shadow in the opposite color again at the bottom. Now, what do we get? Well, we don't get it looking as if it's appearing above the page. because it's reversed, it now actually looks like it is, that's sort of the letterpressed effect again. It's kind of pushed into the page. And we swap it out again, we move it to the top. And then, at that point, the text appears to be above, floating above the page. So, in other words, depending on it being white or black, or light or dark, the effects are reversed. Now, the trouble is that a lot of people are doing these kind of things, they're throwing in text shadows, and not realizing that they're creating these effects. They're suggesting that we're looking at a real-world object. And not only are they suggesting that we're looking at a real-world object, but in some ways, in a way that you don't want to. You don't necessarily want to have the angle of light appearing that way. These are kind of scenarios where a loser like me gets very upset about. But there are ones where people are, you know, throwing in text shadows and they're blurring it and the text shadow is pink or something, and you end up with this horrible, blurred, illegible effect. The worst thing is that, yeah, if you have a black text with black text shadow that's not that transparent, and you just get this horrible blur. It's not good. And the whole reason is people aren't thinking about what they're doing. So let's take the example of the button, the humble button. Well, we've all had this before. Okay, so you design a button and you don't want it to be too buttony. You'd rather kind of do something a little bit more interesting. And the client says, those immortal words, can you make it look a bit more clickable? So you go, well, we'll add some rounded corners then. Because buttons have rounded corners, don't they? Incidentally, where the hell does that come from? As if you could only ever push something if it was soft and silky and rounded. Weird. So we do this, and they say, can you make it a bit more round? Can you make it a bit more pill-like and clickable? And of course, once you've done that, then you are really descending into the seven circles of hell, a hell that involves adding a gradient to make it a bit more pushable, a little drop shadow to make it pop. And then you might as well throw in a bit of the old negative text shadow in there, which you probably can't maybe just about see. And then you feel dirty afterwards and wrong. So the thing is, we try and do these things, but it's not always avoidable. Sometimes you do have to give in. Sometimes you do have to go along with metaphors, and especially ones that are established to suggest certain types of interaction. So just to show you something briefly, this is a client project I've been working on recently. Unfortunately, I've had to pixelate a lot of it because it's still kind of going on. But this is an example of really giving in to a lot of these things. There's in these two main white blocks here, in the bottom left, there's a little shadow just in there to give it the look of it coming off the page. Now, this client did a whole load of branding for them as well. Did all sorts of this stuff like advanced color theory and all things about modular design and everything, and really in depth with all this branding and the whole website design. Massive, massive project. But the stuff they really liked, of course, was like, oh, yeah, the shadow, it looks like it's coming off the page. Yeah, great. So that's great. But actually, in this scenario, I decided that it was one of those occasions where giving in was actually okay, because this whole project was about, the target audience, it was very much centered around housewives in their mid-30s who were very much interested in crafts and doing things with a local community. And to have this very tangible, touchy kind of thing going on throughout the site was actually pretty much a part of their brief. So it is okay to give in. I wouldn't want to come up here and say, okay, right, just disregard all of these conventions that we've built up over the years. It's just about being aware of when we're using them and why we're using them, and if that's relevant to the audience we're dealing with. So I've learned a lot about typography recently, a hell of a lot. Some of you may know I'm behind this magazine called Eight Faces. It's a magazine about typography, and it's a real physical magazine. It exists. You can touch it, you can smell it, you can lick it if you like. And as of this week, last week, it now exists in real actual shops, which is really exciting. It's nice kind of walking past and actually seeing it in shops. It's real, it's fantastic. And I've learned a lot about type from doing Eight Faces, and part of that is obviously because it's a magazine about typography, and I'm trying to kind of get these things right. And interviewing the people there have, kind of taught me a lot of different things about type that I didn't realize before. But just doing a big scale print project and actually thinking about type in a different way, really giving it a lot of attention in a way that I haven't really been able to do with my web design work. So it's been really cool. The story behind Eight Faces is that I was at South by Southwest on a panel about WebType with John, who's on next, and Samantha Warren, and Richard Rutter, and Ian Coyle. And Ian, his point was that really you don't need to have loads of fonts installed on your machine to be like a better designer. You know, in fact, the fewer fonts you have on your machine, then you're more likely to be a better designer because you have a limited toolkit. It's not just about having all this stuff. And the trouble is that many people think that having loads and loads of fonts installed on your machine means you can use any typeface you want for any project and it's fantastic. And that has kind of, that mentality has crossed over to the web, which is a shame because, you know, we're at this very exciting stage with WebType and everything. And now that we've got all of this stuff available, people are, you know, they're excited by it. But really, it's about being very selective with your tools. So with Eight Faces, I learned a hell of a lot from print design. And I did a talk a couple of years ago about the kind of the differences between web design and print design and what we can learn from each other and stuff like that. But doing this project really helped. I realized that I knew very little about treating type properly in print design and stuff like that. So to give you an idea, this is a screenshot of my InDesign file for one of the pages on the magazine. And you can see the baseline grid and some of the columns and stuff that are going on there. Now, with baseline grids on web design have traditionally been a very difficult thing to adhere to, and basically I've never really bothered that much. When I came to doing print stuff, I suddenly realized that I could have this control over everything, and it was fantastic. I could really go to town. I could do things like have the baseline grid set up, have all these things aligning, making sure the pictures in there align to it, the actual borders themselves around the pull quotes are actually the size of the baseline grid. And it was great. I started to learn all of this stuff. And I should have been thinking about it before, but because I hadn't done a large-scale print project, I hadn't really got into it before. Things like incremental leading. You know, if you're not familiar with the idea of if you have a bigger type and you wouldn't want to keep the same leading because it would end up being too tightly spaced or too wide, you have incremental leading where, say, every two lines, every three lines, every four lines lines up with the baseline grid. All of these kind of quite type nerdy things that I'd never really got to experience before are suddenly doing it with print design work. And the difference was that I went back to web design, having done the first issue of Eight Faces, really completely changed. I felt suddenly like that all this stuff that I'd been ignoring before, I could no longer ignore. All the stuff that I'd taken care over with print, I wanted to be able to take that into the world of web design and apply that same kind of care to it. And it completely changed me. And I would very much urge anyone, if you're working primarily on the web and you're a designer, to go out and do some print design work. Because it's fantastic. It's a fantastic antidote. If you're getting bogged down with fixing IE6 bugs, to go out and do some print design. Because on one hand, it's very liberating. You have all these different things to think about. And then you have different things to worry about. You know, if you make a mistake and then you print them, that's 3,000 times that print is happening, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's no kind of last-minute fixes at the end, which is a worry. So then when you start getting worried and you get stressed out by print design, then go back to web design, and it's very refreshing. Now, for the last issue of Eight Faces, I interviewed Tim Brown, the guy behind Nice Web Type, and he's now working at Typekit. And he has this whole concept of working from the type outwards. Again, prior to talking to him, I hadn't really thought about this that much. And then he, a few weeks later, he appeared at Build in Belfast and did a talk called More Perfect Typography. And he expanded upon this a great deal. And it's really, really interesting. Basically, his whole theory is, you know, you select the type first as the one of the initial parts of your project and allow that to dictate everything else. So then you're setting up your baseline grid, and then that's then informing your general grid for how things fit together. Your font size, of course, and the weight, so informing all of these other decisions. And you work from that outwards, which is obviously very much about sort of what Mark's talking about. You know, you talk about we're having the content and then working from the content out rather than the canvas in. And we've got the power now to use loads of really, really cool typefaces from services like FontDeck and Typekit and whatnot. But we have all this freedom, but what we really need to be doing is thinking about these decisions, like working from the type outwards, now that we've got these tools, we can actually start to focus on these details. And it is all absolutely in these details. I mean, also things like, very lucky enough to have Eric Spiekerman sort of do a little critique on the magazine. And one of the things he said was, okay, well, you need to make, you could probably do with a bit of a better measure. You need to have a few more words on the line. So, you know, you need to just take down the font size a little bit, maybe adjust the lettering, stuff like that. And it's great. Those kind of details, stuff that I would never care about before, I do really care about now when I'm doing web design work. And this is all because I took this detour into print, basically. Now, we're talking about the coming of age of web design here. And at the moment, a massive thing for me and for a lot of people is this coming of age of web type. There's a great quote from John Baldley I'll get to in a sec. But you know, there's some really cool tools out there happening right now. You know, there's stuff that this one, Typograph, about scale and vertical rhythm, and allowing you to get some really fantastic typography right from the start before you really design anything else. So there's a lot of stuff out there. And John said in his kind of wrap up of 2010 on ilovetypography.com, he said if 2010 was the web font's incunabula, which I think I said correctly, then it looks as though 2011 will mark its coming of age. And I think that's absolutely true. I'm very, very excited to see what we've got coming this year. Now, this whole thing is a journey. So I don't feel that I can stand up here and teach proper design principles. There are some fantastic books out there which you know, we could go and have a look at. And for me, it's less about getting up here and saying, oh, you should do this, and we must do this. If anything, if I'm being honest, this is kind of me trying to kick my own ass into shape. I'm doing my new website at the moment, and I'm trying to kind of get to that stage where I can be really obsessive about these details and get away from some of that overly textured stuff before, get away from that fascination with the real, and focus on having a really fantastic grid, getting the type absolutely right, working with some of the cool new things that we've got, like responsive web design, and not getting carried away with all the new CSS3 tricks. So it's a constant journey of evolution. I had some really disastrous designs in my portfolio I'm really ashamed of, but I think it's okay to fail. I think you learn by making mistakes. So to keep doing stuff, failing, and then trying again is what I found. And again, switching between different mediums. So there's a lot of stuff to be excited about, as I've said. On the web right now, we've got CSS3 support is fantastic right now. Like, it's just spreading across the browsers. The support is better than we've ever had before by a long way. People are doing some extremely groundbreaking work with all of these new technologies. We've got some JavaScript libraries, which are really, really simple to use. So even designers like me, who I don't like to delve too much into JavaScript, can use things and start playing with these fantastic new toys. But design is bigger than using whatever typeface you want. Like I said, there are people who think it's great that you can have all these typefaces, but really you need to think about those details, constantly asking yourself why. And I don't need to take away that I'm saying things like text shadows are bad. Don't use text shadows. Don't use rounded corners on buttons. That's not it. It's just about being aware of why you're using those visual treatments. And the problems that we've seen in the bad examples and the problems we see on the web, the whole reason they exist is because people are not asking themselves why. And I'm guilty of this, and we're all guilty of this. We're not constantly asking ourselves why at every single stage of the process. And that's something, for me, for 2011, that's something I'm trying to do, and that's something I would urge everyone to do, to constantly be thinking about why you're making these decisions. And the trouble is, you see, is that they need to be decisions. And the problems arise when they're not conscious decisions. They're just thrown, and people hope it sticks. John next is going to have a really fantastic talk, and talking about the emotional reactions that we get from seeing these designs. And admittedly, some of those good examples I showed you are kind of those ones which hit you with an initial emotional reaction, and they're very designy, for lack of a better word, and they have that initial response. And we need to think about that, and then how that goes into the rest of our web work, the web work that's going to last for several months and several years. Now, is this going to work? Here we go. You might just about be able to see this. I've got some audio coming up. So, many of you may recognize the title of my talk as a quote from Spider-Man. I'm quite a Spider-Man fan. And the backstory, if you don't know this, behind the whole thing of with great power comes great responsibility, is the idea that Peter Parker gets bitten by a radioactive spider, gets excited by all these fantastic new powers he's got. He kind of has all this bravado within him. He goes out, he has the opportunity to stop a guy from robbing a place. He doesn't bother, and then this robber then ends up encountering his Uncle Ben and shooting him dead. And then Peter suddenly realizes that if only he'd done that, he could have, if only he'd done the good thing, the right thing, then he would have been able to avert all of that. So with great power comes great responsibility. Now there's a really fantastic thing I want to leave you with. I'm a big fan of the Spider-Man film, the first one. The others are a bit dodgy. But there's a scene in it which always really, really makes me laugh, and I hope this is going to actually play.
Peter?
Yeah?
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Any better this morning? Any change?
Change? Yeah. Big change.
Okay. Tell me he's not looking at his cock. So, the best I can leave you with is don't go full of bravado. Use cool new tools, but don't get too excited. Don't get carried away. Don't go out there being led by your new spider schlong. Do good things. And thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you.